Hey guys, we're the Hard Time Shawman podcast, Dream of a Bear Class of Man, and today we are talking about compartmentalization. I've mentioned this several times through, you know, different episodes, through different subjects. We've talked about it on the Dassos, we talked about it in, you know, setting up a ruck on, you know, missions, whatever. This digs into a lot of my mindset, how I go about things, how I kind of process things. But I feel like when you use this correctly, it's a pretty darn good tool, just for keeping all of your, you know, keeping all your balls in the air, keeping everything in order. But our running definition comes from Cambridge Dictionary: the act of separating something into parts and not allowing those parts to mix together. So today we'll go over kind of how compartmentalization can fit into your personal mindset, how you process things, how they can fit in an operational context. So doing cool guy stuff with your cool guy friends, and how you can, you know, keep track of and take care of your equipment.
But first, you're required to actually have some friends.
We cannot help you have friends.
Nope. Can't help you there.
You should put more points into charisma. Sounds like a skill issue to me.
Oh, God.
It's really not that hard. Send a meme. Send memes to people.
Truly. Just blow up their inbox.
They don't even ask for it anymore. I just send it.
I don't even read half of his memes anymore, to be honest. I just glance and keep going.
I have one friend who doesn't even respond anymore. It's been about a year. So.
Is it Jay?
It's Jay, yeah.
I kind of figured it was Jay. Okay.
I feel so bad for him. Well, I sent it from the work Instagram. So I'm like, I've told him several times it's me, but he never responds. I'm like, yeah, or whatever. This is gold. Fuck you.
It'd be even weirder if it was talking to him.
So dipping into mindset, my thought process with using compartmentalization, my wife used to get mad at me a lot with this when I was still in the Army, because I didn't let my work life touch my personal life.
I mean, rightly so. You definitely shouldn't.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's always been my point of view. She didn't like that because she's just like, I'm married to, you know, such and such. I'm, you know, I have no idea who Specialist 7 is. And I'm like, and that's, you know, that's probably better for you. And she never understood. She didn't like that because I, you know, she said that I was, you know, mean to all my Joes because they were idiots. And, you know, yada, yada, yada. Until I actually took her to a squad function, and I just saw her eyes just continue to get wider. And I'm like, hey guys, we need to go, bye. I was like, hey, you see? And she's like, yeah.
Yeah, it's funny how
that I tried.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, like, you get a part of me that the Army doesn't get. And the Army gets the part of me that I don't give you for good reasons. You know, you put work in a box and you put life in a box and you don't let them touch. Otherwise, it's not good for anybody.
Yeah.
Don't bring your work home with you is something that some people used to say.
Yeah. Luckily, I never met my wife when I was in the Army. I don't know if she would have liked me. If she would have met Army me.
Oh, she would have hated you. You were terrible.
I was a dick.
And granted, I was only in for like a couple of months before, you know, ETS when we were married. But, you know, that's my whole thing. I was like, I'm imagine trying to go through a deployment being married. Like, holy crap.
Yeah, my wife used to say that she wanted to be, you know, a military wife. And I kind of spilled all the crap that, you know, we went through and explained, you know, I mean, it isn't necessarily the same thing, but, you know, Special Forces divorce rate is 90%. And the regular army is not much further off.
I mean, it's just, in my opinion, it's just too much. You know?
It is.
Like, it for is. Me, it, I it, just, I, like, that was a major factor in me getting out at the time, because we were about to go to Iraq. I really wanted to go. But I'm like, I don't want to wait to get married, but also I'm not going to marry you then deploy. Like, that's not going to be good for anybody. You know?
Yeah, no.
It's just, I have to be in a completely different mindset. And, yeah.
I mean, you would have been fine, because, I mean, from everything I understood from their deployment, they...
Well, yeah, just, hindsight being 2020, nothing happened, but...
Freaking tower guard.
Yeah, but still, it's just, I don't think it's a good... I don't know. In my mind, it doesn't mesh well.
No, it certainly doesn't. It's a bad mesh between military and civilians. Just they don't mix. They just don't. Especially when you bring like marriage into it.
They're not supposed to.
It's yeah. It's terrible.
Well, they're not supposed to
in the military.
Fundamentally.
No.
Yeah. Ugh. So besides that, in my mind at least, I think of compartmentalization, you know, in your mindset as thinking of things objectively.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So at least that's how I do it. So something, you know, happens, you know, an event happens, whatever, you have your emotions for that event, you can put that in a box, and then you objectively look at, you know, whatever information. Do I have to act? Do I have to listen? Do I have to, you know, if action has to take place, what do I have to do? If not, what's the course of action? How does that change anything? Does that change what me or mine are going to do? And then you put those in their separate boxes. It's my way of putting things away for later. So, I don't know, I'm trying to think of a good example.
So actually, I kind of have a good one for that, because we were talking on Discord with some people, and they asked me what it was like for me when my child was born. You know, did I get excited? Do I get scared? And I was like, no, man. Like, it was, I basically brought work home with me. You know, I treated it exactly like, you know, an event during a deployment. You know, it was, okay, this happened. What do I need to do? You know, what's my job? What are my responsibilities? What do I do? Like, I took emotion completely out of it. I mean, yes, of course, I was excited, you know, child being born, but at the same time, it was just it was work at that point.
Yeah.
Like, that's all it was. I treated it exactly like I would if, you know, we got into a firefight. It was all work at that point. It was definitely a side of me that I don't think my wife has ever seen, because it was just, boom, locked in, let's go.
Right. What can I do? What can I do? And we'll deal with the rest later.
Right, exactly. Yep. How can I help?
Yeah. Well, now you say that, best example I have is when my youngest was born, and we did not make it to the midwife. We made it to the, you know, to my in-laws, and not 10 minutes after I parked, I was holding my son and I'm delivering him myself with the midwife on the phone. But it's like the oh my gosh, this isn't going to play, and my wife's freaking out. I'm like, we'll be all right. I mean, what are we gonna do? You know, not like we can, you know, drive the extra 2 hours. So
tell that baby to, you know, sit this one out, just stay in there. Right.
Just hold your breath. Like, no. So, you know, like you said, just putting, like, calming that emotion down, putting that emotion in a box, and, you know, your expectations and everything, the original plan, putting all that in a box, and be like, okay, what, you know, what do I have at my disposal? What are my options now? What do I need to do? Doing that, and then we can revisit everything else later. And it didn't hit me until that evening, when, you know, I had my wife resting, I was holding my son, and it was like, oh wow, I did, like, you know, we did this. You know, we this isn't normal. This is not what we planned at all.
Right.
You know, so it's kind of funny how your mind works in that you know, in those moments.
Right. It's exactly right. Because whether you want to believe it or not, like there are lives on the line at that point. So there's no real, you know, letting emotion get the best of you kind of thing. This is all business.
Mm-hmm. Like, I think that all business for you is, you know, like layman's terms, like you put all your emotions, all your expectations,
mm-hmm.
you know, that whole, the upheaval in a box, put it on the shelf and you're like, okay, I don't need you right now. You're not helping.
Right. Yeah. There'll be time to be excited later. There'll be time to, like, you know, to cry, like jump for joy, to, you know, smile, to hug your wife, whatever. Like there'll
be time. Or something negative happens.
Right.
You know, not even a happy thing. You know, like, man, there's time to grieve. There's time to be mad or, you know, whatever later. But
yeah, later, always later. And man, and I hate to go on a tangent about mental health too, but there is a bad side of compartmentalization, and that is one of them. When bad things happen and you compartmentalize that, that's how you end up with, you know, PTSD, depression, anxiety. That's how you end up a statistic. So
if you don't revisit it, you need to revisit it later.
I mean, hell,
it is so easy just to stuff that down.
Right. Even if you do revisit it with someone else. Revisit it, talk with someone. You know, we, at the end of every episode, we talk about, you know, the 988 line. Like, talk to someone. If you're going through something, talk to someone. So that's the bad side of it. Just compartmentalization can work for the good, but it can also, you know, get a little suicide-y.
Well, everything in moderation.
Exactly.
Yeah. And like you said, it is a tool. Yeah, anything can be used right or wrong. So
completely agreed. So let's talk about these tools.
So moving off to operational. So one of the best examples I can think of off the back is, you know, outside of, you know, OPSEC, you know, keeping everything, you know, a secret, not, you know, letting too many people know about too many things. In the book Fry the Brain, the author has a really great case study, you know, example from the IRA. I don't think it's an actual case study. I think it's just a, you know, made up scenario, but from the IRA. And in the scenario, you know, this IRA cell was, this sniper cell was tasked with assassinating a police officer, right? And from the top down, from the guy who actually said, hey, you need to get this done, down to the trigger man, down to the driver, down to, you know, everything, nobody knew the specifics of every little thing. So the guy who issued the order to the team lead said, hey, you need to get this done. You know, you need to do this. And he gave him, I think, like 3 or 5 target packages. And the team leader picked one of them. He's like, all right, great. And he left. It's like, I don't want to know anything else. I don't need to know anything else.
Right.
And the team leader went, collected his guys. He's like, hey, this is what we're doing. And then they left. And, you know, they regrouped at a different time, obviously made sure they didn't get followed or anything else. But down to, you know, the man, they did not know the entire plan. They knew their part of the plan, what they were going to do. And, you know, granted, they knew each other, but those teams shifted, those teams changed all the time. And the idea of this compartmentalization is, if one of those links goes down, if one of those men goes down, gets captured, you know, interrogated, anything, they only know so much.
Yeah, they only know their part of it.
Exactly. They can't give away, you know, the entire scheme. They can't give away every single, you know, person in that chain. It is a super basic, super stout form of just operational security. And it makes it so that if, you know, 2, 3, 5 guys in a cell go down, you're not taking down the entire, you know, the entire system.
It, another example does come to mind, and it is kind of funny. So it was, Jesus, which Dark Knight movie was it with?
Yes, I know exactly what you're talking about. I thought about that example literally halfway through talking about that. I was like, oh, that's another good one.
Yeah, so it's just like everybody's supposed to have a task and they're supposed to kill a different person. And eventually they catch on at the end. And by that time, so many people have gotten taken out. And like,
by that time, no, the last guy figured it out.
Last guy figured it out.
The last guy before Joker in the chain.
Yeah. No. I killed the bus driver. Bus driver. What bus driver? Boom. And he gets taken out by the bus driver. Oh, man. He's not getting up, is he? Nope, he's not. Boom. You're dead, too. And the Joker just drives out. Yeah.
And the entire team's gone. Yeah.
Entire team's gone. That's some OPSEC right there.
I was like, that's it's a silly example, but dude, like, tied up. Like, absolutely no loose ends.
No loose ends.
Very, very aggressive. But the whole idea is, you know, don't put all your eggs in one basket.
Correct. Yeah, no one, Jesus, for love of God, no one needs to know the whole plan. No one needs to know the whole, every aspect of the whole plan. That is just, that is asking for problems, especially in a guerrilla type environment.
Everybody doesn't need to know everything. That's how y'all get killed. But yeah, I mean, literally, so like talking about the IRA sniper cell, are hunter killer teams just sniper cell or just guerrilla cells in general? You know, keep it compartmentalized. 3-5 people, then go out and out and out. But you don't need, like, your smallest, you know, you're the lowest link, the first sniper doesn't need to know, you know, 3 squads over, or, you know, what the whole stratagem is, or where all the supply lines are, or whatever. You know, you need to keep this small. You know, the way that you keep everybody safe is to keep it small. That way, if one person goes down, they don't take out, you know, half your operation. It's just, it's common sense.
Yeah, and obviously this changes with like big army, because when we would prepare to go out for a mission, I mean, good Lord, we knew what everyone was doing.
Yeah.
The op board was just,
that's completely different. Dribble. That's completely different system though.
Yeah.
Completely different structure.
The anti-compartmentalization that is, here's all the information on everything pertaining to this operation down to like the nitty gritty of what 3 other teams are doing, you know, best of luck remembering all this crap.
And I don't like that part. Obviously it makes sense for big army. What I do appreciate, what I do agree with, is everybody knowing everybody else's job, just the base level.
Right.
You should be able to pick up, you know, the next job over. That just makes sense. But
correct.
Yeah, the private doesn't need to know what the platoon sergeant, you know, battalion over is doing. It doesn't make any earthly sense to me. Not like the freaking 18-year-olds can remember any of it. But
that's also the better part of, and that's also where compartmentalization actually comes in with that, because yes, all this information is disseminated to like platoon sergeants, you know, squad leaders, team leaders, and then they pick and choose what information needs to be given out to all the subordinate, you know, members of that platoon or team. That way, they don't have to worry about what 2 other platoons are doing or another entire battalion is doing. Like, it doesn't matter. What's your job in what relates to this operation? You know, what do you need to know to successfully do your job? Does right. this other battalion's operation have anything to do with it? No. So you don't need to know that. Here's all the information that pertains to you and what helping you do your job.
Exactly.
That's the good part about compartmentalization in the big army is, yes, the higher-ups have to deal with all the freaking mindless drivel that comes from op boards, but the lower levels don't have to. It's ignorance is bliss in their minds.
Yep. Anything else for operational?
No. This podcast is sponsored by Blackbeard Firestarter. Blackbeard Firestarter has been our first choice in Firestarter since they introduced their Firestarter rope years ago.
Blackbeard offers their fire starters, their fire plugs, arc lighters, ferro rods, stormproof matches, everything you need to get a fire started.
Their products are made right here in the U.S., wind and waterproof, have an insane burn time, they're basically dummy-proof.
And help you out, Blackbeard let us cherry-pick from their store everything that we want, everything that we thought you needed to get a fire started, and we call it our Hard Time Strongmen Fire Kit. On top of that, they're also offering a 15% discount on anything in their store when you enter code STRONGMEN at checkout.
We can't recommend Blackbeard enough. They stand behind their products, and so do we.
Be sure to check them out at blackbeardfire.com and on Instagram at blackbeardfire. And as always, stay in the fight.
Stay in the fight.
I still lose over a little bit. All right, then moving into equipment. So, compartmentalization in equipment. You're going to have to help me out a little bit with this one. The best example that I came up with was when we get that class on, like, waterproofing your equipment, waterproofing your...
Mm-hmm.
So... You know, yes, you take everything in layers, but the actual compartment, so your main pocket compartment and your sustainment pouches, you know, all auxiliary pouches, you waterproof all these separately, whether that's with a contractor bag or like a, you know, waterproof stuff sack or whatever. But the idea being that you have your outermost protection. Then you have the secondary protection of your, you know, waterproof sacks, but all of your extra equipment within that is also compartmentalized through other waterproof sacks, through Ziplocs, through whatever. So, you know, you have multiple layers of protection and, you know, like items are paired together. So if somehow my ruck and my main, you know, waterproof sack is... you know, compromise. I don't have to worry about my batteries or my undergarments or, you know, whatever, because all those are in their individual sacks, which are all waterproofed.
Right. So what you're basically trying to avoid is the Titanic syndrome, where, yes, you think everything is compartmentalized, but at the same time, water is just rolling over the top of these compartments, and it's just flooding the next one and the next one and the next one until you're just screwed. Kind of thing is, yes, you do not want your socks getting wet, you do not want your underwear getting wet, but you also don't want, say, your batteries getting wet, your phone getting wet. So best thing you can do there is seal off each individual one, like you said. I mean, Ziploc bags inside of waterproof bags inside of a waterproof shell, like layers on layers on layers. That is the best way of protecting all of your stuff.
Well, and also you can go hardier. Like, you showed me that that battery container. I forget what it was called.
Oh. Right. Was that the one where it was like just that hard freaking case on the outside and you like twist it open and there's like individual battery kind of things in it, or what?
You had it. Here? You had it. It opened up. It was kind of like a tool tray, but had all different kinds of batteries on the front and the back.
Oh, Battery Daddy. Yeah.
Yeah, that one. Battery Daddy. That thing is like that.
That thing is definitely not waterproof, but yeah, I see what you're saying.
But like Pinewood Machining, I think is the name. I think they make waterproof battery containers.
Okay. Yeah, like that 3D
printed, twist on top, that kind of deal.
That is 100% a must. Definitely keep your electronics and batteries waterproofed to the max.
Right. And then what? I was thinking also, so outside of like waterproofing, you're taking care of equipment, so you're like, you know, like cross-loading ammunition, cross-loading batteries, you know, through your separate persons. You're not keeping all of your eggs in one basket, so you know, our squad leader would have one or two guys, you know, carry extra radio batteries. You know, so if his battery went down and his spare went down, he'd go over, grab another spare from somebody else, or you know, just trying to spread things out in case, you know, whatever, just in case. Fill in the blank.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess you could look at it that way. Mainly, I mean, yeah, I guess you could apply it that way, but the main premise behind that is just so that one person, i.e. the freaking RTO, is not carrying all the spare batteries in the world.
Yeah.
As is his job. But no,
also, go for it.
I was going to say that same principle really was applied also to like the 240 gunners, because I can remember as an RTO, I carried a belt of 7.62, which why the hell would I need a belt of 7.62
when I'm ever carrying, see you?
When I'm carrying 70 pounds of freaking radio and batteries and my own ammunition, like I don't, my weapon doesn't use 7.62.
That just seems silly. Yeah.
But I mean, I get it. It's just so that like one or two people is not carrying all that ammunition. I totally get it.
Cause I've been the assistant gunner carrying 600, 700 rounds of freaking 7.62 hanging my life.
Like, yeah,
I've lived that life. It's so much fun. It's so great.
I can totally understand an RTO carrying some of it, because I mean, if the call goes out, hey, we need ammunition, I mean, dude, who's going to hear it first? The RTO.
Yeah, that's fair.
Honestly, when I was in,
but it's not like you're leaving the platoon leader though. It's not like you're running over to a gun position to. Well, I guess he'd be floating between. He'd be floating between. That makes sense.
Yeah. So when I was with first platoon, I was part of weapons squad as the RTO.
Yeah, well, I was gonna say doctrinally the PL would float between the gun teams,
mm-hmm.
directing fires, but.
Yep.
Yeah.
Dude.
Outside of waterproofing your stuff, that's the best example I have.
Yeah, I mean,
I was just saying, do you have anything else for compartmentalization?
No, because I feel like we hit hard on operational mindset, and also just like mindset, you know, the mindset right. was probably going to be the hardest hit one. Because, I mean, you could delve into the good and the bad side of compartmentalization with that, which we did.
Yeah.
I mean, we didn't get, like, too hot and heavy into it, but we did touch on it, so. But no, as far as equipment goes, I feel like with equipment, that's really where compartmentalization is kind of key. Because you have your RTO, you have your weapon squads, you have your C-burn, like everything is, you have your armor, like all of your specialties are compartmentalized together so that no one has to know everything, you know?
Right.
That's the main thing there, because who the wants to know all about C-burn, all about, you know, maintaining just like gun counts and serial numbers, and who wants to know all about radios and how many batteries we have and like what the frequencies are. Like, do you want to know all of that when you're a freaking grenadier? No. Why would he need to know that?
Specialization.
Exactly. It's all about specialization when it comes to compartmentalization as far as equipment goes, because supply is one thing, radio is another, admin's another thing. Like those are your
and it's all need to know kind of thing.
Exactly.
So like the original definition we went off. So separating something into parts and allowing those parts to mix together, right? So as a whole, you know, no, your lowly scrunt doesn't need to understand, you know, the ins and outs of the supply line or all of your radio frequencies or, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But your specialists in those fields do need to know that so they can disseminate what needs to be known so that guys Correct. Can work with what they do need to know down to the lowest common denominator.
Correct. And that's all what it comes down to as well is supply does not give a crap what admin is doing. Admin is the exception to the rule. Admin needs to know exactly what everyone else is doing, period. So there,
that's the scope.
Like supply doesn't care what Seaburn's doing. Seaburn doesn't care what the armor's doing. Armor doesn't care what radio is doing. Like
everybody doesn't need to know everybody doesn't need to know everything.
Correct.
At the end,
I think that was probably what was frustrating the most as the RTO, and you can attest to this, is weapons draw. Bro, why do we have to get there 30 minutes early to 30 minutes early to 30 minutes early to 30 minutes early for a freaking 06 weapons call for a 10 o'clock range time? Why do we need to get there that early? Well, we don't know because we're not privy to admin.
And half of it is CYA, just because you know somebody's going to be late. So you're trying to, you know, cover that as much as possible. But that's also just a... Holy crap, we're getting in the weeds. But that's also just an organizational problem with the army. Because if you had a smaller army, cut all the fat out like we talked about, you know, a while back, then you could afford to have a separate range for your individual units. And then I wouldn't be having to drive for an hour cross post, get a freaking, you know, drive my striker into somebody's car, you know, while I'm trying to go to the range or try to get back from the range. You know, I can go in the backyard of my unit or go call up the armorer because I freaking know the guy and be like, hey, we're pulling this. Pull it. Walk down the street for, you know, a couple miles and be at the range. And that would actually give you flexibility to not even, you know, only take out your platoon, but take out squads or teams. Mm-hmm. You know, if you have a deficiency, being able to go out on a freaking Tuesday and fix the deficiency. If you actually cared about your dudes, or better yet, right, you're going to, you know, the hill that somebody's going to die on is, hey, every, you know, such and such has to have an armorer. Okay. Designate one armorer per squad and then have individual weapons lockers. All of my every Joe has a weapons locker, has his rifle, has Nods, everything all in there. He signs for it anyways. I don't freaking care. Okay. If I have a armor per squad, check it every week. I could care less. But if I want to go out on a Tuesday at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, I should be able to do that. If it's my prerogative. Hey, dude, go get your locker. Go get your rifle. We're leaving. It should be that simple.
So I understand what you're saying.
If you had smaller units, you should be able to staff a range 24 hours a freaking day.
Sorry. So I totally understand what you're saying. And we're getting in the weeds on this, and I don't care. The problem is you cannot trust an 18-year-old, 19-year-old Joe to not take that rifle and then go shoot a post because he's had an argument with a girlfriend or a stripper.
But that's why you have your armor.
Exactly. So I see what you're saying.
Don't trust the Joe with a padlock, right? That's what your lower to middle leadership is for.
Yeah. So I totally agree.
Yeah, don't give the private. I'm sorry. I keep talking over cohort.
You're fine. I'm just kidding. I totally see what you're saying, and I totally agree. There should be individual like squad armory lockers. period. Like, you should be able to get into that armory, the big one, plain and simple. The armor should then be able to unlock individual squad lockups for weapons to be able to check them out. Like, all the armors should have access to the armory, and then you should be able to access your individual squad's lockers. So, hey, like you said, I want to go take it out. Cool. I'm going to meet you there. Let's go. Go get your weapons. Go. You should not have to wait for one freaking dude like we've had to do in the past to get there to unlock the freaking armory so that we can do a weapons draw to do our yearly quals, which, by the way, I'm going to get in the weeds on this. Why in the hell, when our job is to kill people, are we doing yearly quals? Why are we not going to the range way more often? Because it's our freaking job to be mass murderers, more or less. We need to be deadly. Why once a year?
Budget, and we don't care about lethality. So we actually care about lethality. We would cut down on all the fat. You'd actually be able to take these kids out. And that's the whole thing. With competency, there's your trust. If I can trust you to like have your job down pat, like, I don't mind taking you in the range wherever the hell you want. But if I'm like, I'm gonna have to beat this kid over the head with a stick because he keeps slagging people because the army sucks and I only got to the range once a freaking year, you know, like, it's not a good deal. The whole thing needs to be redone. The whole freaking thing. And that's the thing, like, you say, like, I understand having, you know, you need to have accountability of all your stuff so people aren't, like, going off doing whatever, right? But I say you have, you know, a squad or a platoon room, you know, like the big, you know, whatever, like we had. But then literally every single person has their individual locker. There, that way you don't have to worry about TA-50. You don't have to worry about any of your equipment. It's all there because you signed for it, right? I have a clipboard, you know, hanging up on the side of it, showing, you know, when's last, you know, like, everything that I signed for. I can look visually, see everything's there. And then if I know this kid's death perception sucks at night, I'd be like, hey, idiot, we're going out tonight. We're going to walk around and we can just pull our knots and go and not have to worry about it. I'd pull my squad out in civvies with knots on. We just walk around. Like, so they can actually get a good handle on death perception, on how everything works. You know, so you don't have to worry about it.
And every time you take stuff out, take it back in, you sign out exactly what you're signing out to use and sign it back in after every use. That way, if it doesn't come back, you know exactly who lost it.
Well, that's my whole thing. Like, if you lose something, it's yours. If you lose something and you're under my, you know, my responsibility, it's my too. We're not going to lose anything. You know, like, especially if it's individual, because I tell you right now, I don't give a crap when I go, like, into an armory and I see 200 rifles. Who cares? You know what I mean? But if my individual rifle is in my individual locker with all of my individual stuff that I signed for, that makes it more real for me. Especially for your younger Joes.
Yeah.
And it's the respect thing, too. It's like, hey, this is all your stuff. Take care of it. Yeah, we actually made space for you. You can work on this stuff if you want to. Call me.
So the best part is we actually had that kind of thing at my first unit, at First Cav.
Every single time you talk about First Cav, it sounds better. At every level.
It was. I'm so sad that unit actually shut down. I truly am. Because you walk in to the bay and it's just lockers.
Dude.
Lockers and lockers and lockers. Everybody's TA-50 is in there. Just like you said. The only thing that we didn't do was weapons and knots. But your gas mask was in there. All your TA-50 was in there. Uniforms were in there if you needed them for backup. And anything else remotely operational was in there.
Makes perfect sense. So
you had it on hand. You could see it. You knew it was in there.
Yep. It just makes sense.
And then I came down to meet you guys. And what a backwards operation.
You're being very liberal with the word operation.
I mean, what else would I describe it as? Like the inmates running the asylum? Like it was
a dumpster fire would be a very apt description.
Dude, it was a dumpster fire filled with like 3-day-old diarrhea in Indian food. Like it was.
All right, guys, we have 9 months to prepare for this deployment. 2 weeks from deployment. All right, guys, we got these two guys that are going with us. They're straight out of base. Make sure they get their TA-50.
Like, they need their TA-50. They need a weapon. They need nods. They need a room. It's like, are y'all kidding me?
Nope. No, they were not. Oh. Hey, Grizzle.
Anyway.
We should probably be done.
No, we covered mindset. We covered operational. We covered equipment. Equipment was the hard part. Mindset, I feel like we could have gotten so far in the weeds on just basically.
That is a whole episode on its own, I think. But
it truly is. We do need to hit that. I've said this so many times. We truly do need to hit a.
Every time you say we need to hit mental health, we've already hit mental health just in little seconds. I'm going to go back and do a supercut of all the times that we went on a tangent. And that'll be your probably episode. Could. My gift to you.
Probably could. Do it. That way I don't have to do the work.
Right. All right, guys. Well, that is all we have. We are the Hard Time Show podcast. Trust me. Talking about compartmentalization. Make sure to hit us up on Instagram, on Spotify, Discord, Patreon. Patreon is where we're going to do all of our images. If we ever have images for an episode, show notes, any other kind of correspondence there, any extra stuff is going to be on the Patreon for everybody to have. Also, our patron cuts with the pre-shows, post-shows, all the little tidbits in the middle is on there. Spotify, you know, hit us up. You can comment on individual episodes now. So let us know what you think. If you have any questions about an episode, if you have any recommendations for future episodes. What? Discord? Discord is happening. It's popping. All sorts of stuff all the time. Talking about the housing market, talking about medical, talking about what do you mention in this episode? Birth stories, all sorts of stuff.
Oh, so, yeah, we cover everything. I mean, Discord in and of it, Discord's been in like a data soda in and of itself. It's been pretty fun.
So until next time, guys, we are the Hard Time Shaman podcast. Chicken Bavaria class man. Stay in the fight.
Stay in the fight. Check out our Discord, where we talk about all of the topics that we talk about in our conversations, but in deep dive format. We have a lot of members on there of varying skill sets, of varying proficiencies, all talking about all these topics, sharing their experiences. So join today and help us expand our knowledge base.
And check out our Patreon. Our Patreon, outside of just backing up all of our episodes for when we eventually get canceled, our patrons get access to our exclusive episodes, our pre-shows, our post-shows, our little tidbits here and there that we aren't really supposed to talk about. We're also opening up all of these exclusive episodes for people to individually purchase. So you don't have to get tied into a tier in order to get all that content. You can dip your toes in a little bit, decide you like it, then come and join us on that. We're having exclusive conversations, and along with the Discord, we are just building that community, building that skill set, that mastery, these proficiencies. And this, outside of our sponsor, is what's keeping the lights on and keeping all of this information, all these classes rolling for you guys. So make sure to check out our Patreon. And one last thing, guys, the world is better with you in it. If you're feeling suicidal or if you're in crisis, dial 988 or reach out at 988lifeline.org to get help. Someone's always on the line. So if you need a lifeline, remember 988. Stay in the fight.
Stay in the fight.